Yeah, I got sober originally in 83. I don't have continuous time from that period. I got sober this last time in, let's see, my sobriety date is, shoot, March 2nd, 2014. Sorry. I've had 12 years and picked up 5 years twice, just shy of 6 years, one of those two occasions. Some other periods of time in between. By grace, most of this time has been in recovery, because I don't do well when I'm not. This is a Zen-based meeting. I'm going to speak to mindfulness in reference to my recovery. I'm also a crazy borderline. I have borderline personality disorder, and I'm one of the people that dialectic behavior therapy was developed for. Mindfulness is one of the core things with that. And it's been something that's really, it has become core to my recovery. With that being said, sobered up early. I sobered up in my early 20s because my dad was a cop in the 60s and 70s. He was the psycho cop that liked to beat his wife and kids. Everybody knew it. Nobody did anything about it. He was a bad cop. And I mean that in, you figured that one out. I'm going to leave it there because it applies. Pretty much, if you bring it up, I can tell you, yep, that's the way he was a racist bastard. And since this is an Irish meeting, I can get away with that. So there you go. He was a racist bastard. I quit drinking the first time when I was 14, when my parents quit drinking. Alcoholism is also the disease of choice in our family, or not choice. It was also the tip of my iceberg. My father was also a borderline. I get to play with what it boils down to is I have a hard time self-regulating my emotions. I have a hard time dealing with distress tolerance. And mindfulness has been one of those things that has worked for me. I've been sober this time a little over 11 years. When I was in my mid-30s, I did a couple of trauma healings around childhood issues and was introduced to a couple of different meditation techniques. Some worked, some didn't. I followed a guru for a couple of years. That seemed to help because my problem was, y'all, I couldn't stay sober. You know, and it wasn't because I wasn't working a program. Wasn't because I wasn't going to meetings. I was going to a lot of meetings. I was staying sober, you know, but every few years I would pick up, and it was always a disaster. And what I discovered was that I wasn't treating my mental illness. Okay. Not all of them. All I was treating was my alcoholism. You know, and we talk about it in AA, in traditional AA, about alcoholism being the tip of the iceberg. And for me, that is absolutely the truth. My alcoholism is a symptom of a number of other things that I get to recover from, that I get to heal from. I kind of came into mindfulness again through a side door rather than, you know, necessarily coming to meditation or Buddhism as such. I was introduced through it to it by a therapist in the 90s through DBT. God, I was a rageaholic, essentially. I mean, I was, you would have assumed, are you kidding? Okay, she may not drink, but she probably does a lot of stimulants because that one's crazy. You know, she cannot calm the hell down. I was somebody who, the phone. Back then, yeah, it would have been the wall phone. The sucker would have vibrated off the wall if it was one of the old-fashioned wall phones. But the truth is that the chair that I was going to occupy in any meeting vibrated for 20 minutes before I arrived because I was that angry at 4 or 5 years sober. And I couldn't figure out why. I couldn't figure out why I couldn't. My anger just kept getting. I don't know that it was more difficult to deal with. I couldn't get beyond it, and I knew I needed to. It was quite obvious that my therapist and I, my sponsor, I needed to get below the anger. And I couldn't find any space. There was no space. There wasn't that crack to offer me the opportunity to stuff a fingernail in there to begin to dig away at it so that I could see some space and begin to comprehend something other than anger on that. So through meditation and mindfulness, through observing and describing, through backing up when I got overwhelmed with any emotion, whatever it was. Usually it was anger. But I'd get overwhelmed and I would back away. I would walk away for a bit, be able to begin to see. And it took years for me to do this, y'all. This wasn't something that came quickly or easily. I'm not sure if I'm a slow study. Excuse me. I'm not sure if I'm a slow study or if I have slow briety or what the issue is, but that one, finding the base emotion underneath my anger so that I could stop drinking was hard work. I'd been sober before. I'd been doing DBT. I picked up, and this time I couldn't get sober, and that was in 06. For a year and a half, I drank a half gallon of vodka a day. Wow, my throat just hurt saying that. It's been a long ass time. So yeah, that was in 06, and I've picked up since then. But at any rate, I got introduced to a sponsor who loved me in spite of the fact that I couldn't quit drinking. She and three other women would get up and sit next to me because I wore camo. I'm 6 feet tall. I weighed 200 pounds back then. I weigh 150 now. I was also 20 years younger, so I was a lot angrier. Those women would get up and sit next to me no matter where I sat in that meeting room. And I vibrated with anger and I vibrated with shame because I couldn't quit drinking and I was frightened. So, when I sobered up by grace and managed to put together 30 days, those three women had colluded and decided who was going to be my sponsor. And it was the one who could handle my anger. She wasn't afraid of me. The other two were a little, afraid of what the fuck was going on with Leanne. That's kind of really scary shit, and Joanne never had an issue with it. She was my sponsor for a number of years. She died in 2014, clean and sober, 28 years clean and sober after a really shitty bout with cancer, y'all. I had the opportunity to watch her walk through that with grace and dignity. That example has given me the strength and the courage, to see that somebody else was able to walk through some truly horrific life circumstances. Taught me how to do some things that way. Very grateful. So I'm angry and I desperately want to get sober. And I finally hit 30 days and I've got a therapist and a sponsor who seem to have each other's phone numbers. Because I'm being honest. I'm getting stuff in stereo, y'all. I've got I see my therapist on Monday and we talk about tolerance or whatever, whatever the issue is at that point. I gotta talk to my therapist about it. I see my sponsor later on in the week. We talk about something similar, and the answers, the solutions are the same. I got the consistency I needed. And that therapist suggested DBT, mindfulness, meditation, Buddhism. So I had the opportunity to learn how to eat mindfully, how to listen without thinking about a response, how to go to a meeting and take in the meeting, how to sit through a meeting where something's been said that triggers me, learning skills that would enable me to not pick up. I think the thing that always floors me is there's a word that I use regularly about myself that therapists used. I'm resilient because I always fucking come back. Traditional AA saved my ass and got me sober every time. I hope I'm finished with that. I really do. I can't guarantee I am. I really, really hope I'm past my last pickup. Because it's just shitty. So, I stayed sober for a long ass time again. Going to AA meetings, going to traditional AA meetings, seeing a therapist, doing work with DBT. And then I picked up again in 2013, 2012, 2013, 2012. Okay, I picked up in 2012. The consequences hit in 2013. I got a felony DUI in Arizona. I got to spend 5.5 months behind bars. And one of Thich Nhat Hanh's books, Cooling the Flames of Anger. Wisdom for Cooling the Flames was on the cart in that county jail. And I read that. So it was a big book. But that anger, cooling the flames, dealing with it with wisdom. Wisdom for Cooling Flames, Thich Nhat Hanh. I read this book cover to cover and I tore it up. I mean, I did. I handed it off to somebody else when I left, and there were scribbles and notes and all kinds of stuff in it. And it had kept me sane and sober while I was behind bars. And I picked up again after that, twice more. So my final sobriety date currently is 11 years and some odd months ago, in that it's March 2nd of 2014. That's a long time to pick up off and on. But at any rate, I have been going to a lot of meetings. I've been doing a lot of recovery dharma. I've had a lot of life situations that have occurred in the last several years. I tried to get away from meetings, literally. Got sick and tired of them. Really got tired of the pandemic hit, and I walked away from meetings for quite a while because I'm high risk. So I stayed away from face-to-face meetings for a long time. My home group was, until I moved to Joshua Tree, AA by the Bay. It's a bonfire meeting that meets once a week on Saturday nights at 7 o'clock. So if y'all are ever in San Diego and you got nothing to do on a Saturday night, go check out that meeting. It's absolutely fabulous. It's a great place. It's the first place I figured out that it was possible to have fun in recovery. But when I got sober in Arizona, things were really shitty. I lost everything. That time, this last time, I lost everything. I lost my house. I lost my car. My mom, I didn't lose my mom. My mom died after I sobered up. She was there when I took my first breath. And because you all got me sober, and I was 2 weeks over a year sober when she died, I was there when she took her last breath. And you guys gave that to me. You folks gave me the gift of being able to be there for my mom. And the bigger gift that you gave her was the knowledge that by looking at me, she could see that I wasn't going to lose my mind and pick up and drink over her death. Okay, so she died with some peace because I found some better recovery than I'd ever had. So I stayed away from meetings for a long time. And I got arrogant and cocky and stupid and arrogant, cocky and stupid. And did I say I got arrogant, cocky and stupid? Because the problem was, as I was believing what was going on between my ears, when I don't go to meetings and stay in community, I pay attention to what's going on between my ears, and my mind is the most dangerous neighborhood I've ever been in that isn't where I wander around unarmed. And I can't wander around my own brain unarmed. It just doesn't work. I need other people to pull my covers, because I come to meetings and I'm honest. I'm not going to bullshit. I don't have time for that. I don't know why I've lived this long, except that there's a reason for it. my expiration date hasn't come and gone. And I discover I was given the gift of some Buddhist meetings when I was in San Diego. Before we moved back, well, before we moved up here last year, and then previously before that too, and walked away. Don't ask me why. I don't know. I wish I did. I don't know why. I guess I wasn't ready, or I was too lazy to do the practice that I needed to move forward. So last year, March, April, just after my 10th birthday, I could see my happy house was headed toward relapse. I was about to hit that crest, the crest that hill, and go zippity-doo-dah, slide down that slick slope. Scared the shit out of me, the thought of picking up again did, because it had been 10 years. And 12 years is the longest stretch I've ever had sober, y'all. Sober, not in a recovery. This time it's sober and in recovery. I started going to secular meetings last year because somebody introduced me to them. I started going to TOSNUA and Recovery Dharma. I discovered I didn't have to go to meetings where I needed to be told to hit my knees and find God. I discovered that I could go to meetings and meditate, that I could be gentle and compassionate with myself. You taught me to be kind to myself again, maybe for the first time ever. I'm not kind by nature. I can be kind to you. Okay, I'm not nice. That's a four-letter word. I am not nice. I can be kind. And you have taught me Recovery Dharma and the Eightfold Path and the Four Noble Truths have given me the opportunity to change an anger narrative I never thought I could change, y'all. My partner, here's the perfect example. I'm going to give this example because this is huge. I've lost jobs because of my anger. It's fear. Fear, sadness, and pain. Those are the three. And for me, 90% of the time, it's fear. I'm terrified I'm going to lose something I think is important. So recently, my partner, we haven't been communicating well. And I've worked really hard at trying to change that on my part, do what my part to change that. I can't change them. That's not my job, and I'm not trying to. I've reached out a number of times to fix this financial situation. Especially first part of the year, again, first part of April, the answer was no, I got this. No, I got this. Everything's fine. No, I got this. Okay. No problem. About a month ago, my partner got scammed, got a text, which led to a phone call, which led to a trip into town. Because we live in the middle of the desert. I don't live in town. I live on a dirt road 6 miles from Joshua Tree, but in Joshua Tree. So, He didn't tell me what he was doing. He hid it. He didn't tell me how much he got until much later. I found out how much it was later. But the upshot of it is this person convinced him that he needed to give them X amount of cash, all of our credit cards, all of our debit cards. And it took a week to find out about it. I'm a borderline. Rage is my go-to. And blame and verbally abusiveness and being inappropriate and not being workable and being a complete and total fool is my go-to, has been my go-to. I haven't been an asshole yet. It's been about a month. We're still wrangling with the. We're quite a bit. I've got a lot of research I get to do. I haven't called him a name. I have absolutely lost my cool, not my temper. Big difference for me. Losing my cool means that I know what I'm doing and I'm doing it intentionally. Losing my temper means that I've pretty much close to a meltdown, and I'm losing my temper so that I don't melt down. That's the way my system works. It doesn't change my responsibility for this, folks. You know, I'm the one who's responsible for fixing any issues I cause. You know, any on my con the consequences are solely on my shoulders when I lose my cool, or if I lose it, when I lose my temper, or if I lose it. And the point is that today I have control again for the first time, not again, for the first time. And that's the appropriate use of self-control. You know, it's been difficult because I've needed to pull information out of this individual. And I've been lied to up until about 4 days ago, repeatedly because of their shame level. And I get that. You know, I mean, this person's human just like I am. So you folks have taught me to be kinder. To walk with a loving kindness and compassion, to treat him the way I want to be treated, because for this alcoholic, the best person in recovery, the hardest part for me is to remember to be appropriate all the time with the people I love. No one ever deserves the sharp side of my tongue, ever. For some reason, I think in my brain that the people I love can be expected to accept some of it. That's just bullshit. You know, no one deserves the short side of my tongue because sh the sharp side of my tongue because I'm being judgmental. I've taken your inventory and I've just stuffed it down your throat and I'm dancing on your corpse. I mean, that's just how toxic that is for me. So, being able to come to my recovery with mindfulness and intention is huge today because I don't have to. I cause problems cold sober, folks. Cold sober. I create major issues with my mouth, catastrophic, big problems if I'm not being intentional when I get into being a dry drunk. And nothing ever works for me. You know, I've talked therapy, other things. Working through meditation and mindfulness, the work that I do through Recovery Dharma, and the other secular meetings I go to, is what's made the difference for me. And that's my, you know, honestly, that's it. Traditionally, A sobered my ass up. Everything else has built on that. And with that, I'd like to say thank you so much for the opportunity, and I pass.
Yeah, thank you, Leanne, for your share with us today. I'm very, very thankful. I'm so glad that you were able to share more mindfulness with us. But I do have a question because I'm wondering what tools of mindfulness were the most, I guess, challenging, or even which of your favorites? Because I was listening and was seeing which. Would your favorite or Most challenging.
My favorite skills are observe and describe, because that keeps me involved. It keeps me present. It keeps me in the moment. So when I can feel overwhelm coming, when I can feel a large emotion rising, I can, at this point, I don't have to walk away any longer. I can stay physically wherever it is that has the issue might have occurred, stay present, observe my feelings, describe what's going, observe and describe the feelings that are going on in my body so that I can move through it, the thoughts that are going through my brain. Or I can choose to observe and describe what's going on in front of me as opposed to what's going on here. It might be more appropriate for me to ignore that. And I think the hard part was learning to differentiate the two. Realizing that I had a choice beyond leaving, because leaving was such a big deal early in recovery. Being able to shut my mouth, being able to visualize duct tape over my mouth and then leave the room without causing any further damage. The hardest thing for me has been keeping my mouth shut. When I think I need to be heard, keeping my mouth shut will always be my challenge. It's still a challenge. I get to work on that daily. Nobody's entitled to my opinion except me.